Jim, 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 Jim.
You've legalized smiling.
Thank you. Hey, Pierre is going to be on the iHeart Talk Radio Network, and that's going to make a lot of people happy.
Show me your smile.
Yes.
It's been 2 years without smiles. Let's do some more smiling in this country again.
Let's. Tomorrow on the Jerry Agar Show.
You've legalized smiling.
Fantastic, Pierre. Can't wait. That'll be tomorrow on the Jerry Agar Show in Toronto. But you can listen to it wherever you get the iHeartRadio app, which is everywhere. Hey, everybody. Thank you for your time and welcome to the broadcast. I'm Jim Richards. I see that Bud Light, they know how to get things going again. They've unveiled some camouflage bottles. Good for them. I think it's a good idea. I mean, if Kid Rock still wants to shoot them, he might not be able to see them in the forest. But aside from that, that's great marketing. Where's the bro? You know, like a real dude, you know. Well, let's get one of those guys and tell us what to do. Camouflage bottle, okay. A man in North Dakota has been indicted for stealing red slippers worn by Judy Garland in The Wizard of Oz. I know I heard that on the iHeart Radio Network. But I was just thinking, what could the penalty be? Maybe 10 years pinned under a house? Is that a good idea? Did I ruin the movie for somebody? It's 100 years old. Fast and Furious grossed almost $100 million. Actually, only 67. I like to round up to the most. Man, that is kind of successful, I guess. $67 million. Wait a second. Hope this doesn't give them an idea for sequels. Fast and Furious. It's 10, by the way. And finally, Paul Simon is suffering from partial hearing loss. Most prominent whenever Art Garfunkel asked for a reunion. Pardon? What are you saying? A reunion? How's everybody feeling that we're back and ready to go on a Monday, huh?
Everyone can smile.
Yes.
Look around at those smiles.
Excellent.
In this crowd. Look at these smiles, everybody. Show me your smile.
News Talk Tonight is on with your host, Jim Richards, on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
All right, folks, this just in moments ago. An update. It's Tuesday. It's not Monday. I'll keep you up to date on the days of the week as things progress. But my sources right now, meaning 100 people on the text board, are like, wait a second, we're supposed to agree with your take on the news when you don't even know what day of the week it is? Let me go through the days just to instill confidence in the people of this great country. There's Monday, it's followed by Tuesday, then Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Then you start all over again at Monday. Thank you very much. Confidence instilled again in the nation. By the way, later on the show, we'll get an idea of what somebody who worked in CSIS thinks about David Johnston's announcement. Also, a diplomat who worked in China, and the political perspective later on right here on the iHeart Talk Radio Network. Hi again, everybody. I am broadcaster known as Jim Richards.
You've legalized smiling.
Yep, smiling is fantastic for Pierre Poilievre. I don't know. Is this a good day for the guy?
What does this rapporteur even do? It sounds like a fake job.
Yep, I'm guessing it is probably a good job for him.
And there will also be something called a rapporteur, a fake new position that they've invented. Rapporteur. Does it come with a costume? Maybe a cape or and a sword?
I actually like that. I got a kick out of every time he said it.
Something called a rapporteur.
Oh.
What does this rapporteur even do?
Ooh, a rapporteur.
It sounds like a fake job.
Well, I guess it is, because that's what he stuck to earlier today.
We see today that his ski buddy, cottage neighbor, family friend, and member of the Beijing-financed Trudeau Foundation came out and did exactly what I predicted. Helped Trudeau cover up the influence by Beijing?
I don't know. Does that get good on predictions? I mean, cryptocurrency? Not so much. Everybody else thought he was going to go with an inquiry. In fact, I thought Trudeau should have stepped out there earlier today and said, listen, I know what the highly respected David Johnston says, but I still, just because of all of the people who have planted the seed of doubt and the great qualified David Johnston, I am going to say, let's do an inquiry anyway.
I committed to listening very carefully and abiding by
recommendations
that the the former Governor General made, and he explained and justified his thought processes by it, and we will be following his recommendations.
Well, that's, I think, a bad move right there, folks. A really, really bad move, because what he should have done was come out and said, you know what, there's too much ugliness around this thing. I am going to call for an inquiry. But instead, after that, the rest of the press conference was basically... Nothing. You're saying I'm accusing the Prime Minister of just going on and saying nothing? Is that what you're claiming that I'm doing? Yes, I am, because listen.
At the G7, one of the things we discussed was
nobody cares. He's like, you know what I did at the G7? I went there and I told them how good we are.
At the G7, one of the things we discussed was the rapid response mechanism that Canada introduced when we hosted in 2018, so that we could all strengthen our response to diverse and evolving threats to democracy.
So what were the recommendations earlier today by the rapporteur, David Johnston?
Based on my review, I have reached five clear conclusions. First, foreign governments are undoubtedly attempting to influence candidates and voters in Canada. Foreign interference is a real and growing threat, and more remains to be done promptly to strengthen our capacity to detect, deter, and counter foreign interference in elections.
So he also did something that I thought was really interesting. He pointed out that, hey, a lot of the leaks didn't make sense because they weren't in full context, as Scott Reed pointed out earlier today with Vashi Capellos.
You know, you're going to hear opposition cries of it's a whitewash and all that. No, it's not. I mean, he's identifying serious gaps. But I think it could end up being the worst of all possible worlds for the government. And I mean that for this reason. And my logic is this. First, there is no public inquiry of the sort that might, if not satisfy, at least silence some of the most harsh critics who say, well, you know, they've got a friend of the family conducting this oversight, and now, you know, we need independence. And at least a public inquiry, even if large elements had to be conducted in camera.
I would have agreed with what Scott just said, but David Johnston...
I found him persuasive on this point, but I thought that he did come close to saying that the media don't have it right because the media don't have full context, and that they're relying therefore solely on the perspective of one source.
The elections of 2019 and 2021 were well protected by sophisticated mechanisms, and there is no basis to lack confidence in those results.
And when you do dig deep and read this entire thing, and I have to admit that I haven't, but what is interesting is, as Matt Gurney pointed out earlier today on the iHeartTalk Radio Network, when you get into the nitty-gritty, he does kind of condemn the government for not having better processes in place to make sure that this information is getting to the right people.
Go read the report. Go read specifically, I would say, roughly pages 17 through to pages 21. And what you're going to see in that finding, guys, is one of the most low-key, scathing indictments of a Canadian government you are ever going to read in your life. And I don't mean of Justin Trudeau personally, or of Katie Telford, or of any particular cabinet minister, but how our government handles classified information is insanely broken. One of the things we learned in the Johnson report is that the prime minister is briefed on classified information when CSIS or maybe another intelligence agency sends a binder into a room. And the binder could be hundreds of pages of long, and it is not differentiated. It is just page after page of raw intelligence. And
Matt goes on to say that, you know, that one guy reads it and decides whether or not the prime minister needs to find out about it. So that's one of the things that will be addressed by David Johnston as well. I just want to say one final thing here, that I do think David Johnston, I did think he should have resigned just because of how people are going to treat him and drag his name through the mud. But to say that we need hearings, which I do think are important, I think at that point he says, should say, just so justice is not just done, but seen to be done, I'm stepping back rather than doubling down and become a part of the process. We'll address that and much more. The Rundown is next.
A recent study says younger people are more likely to believe in hell.
Thank you.
And you are listening to it. Jim Richards on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Something called a rapporteur. And there will also be something called a rapporteur. A fake new position that they have invented. Rapporteur. Does it come with a costume? Maybe a cape or a sword?
The rapporteur spoke earlier today.
Based on my review, I have reached five clear conclusions. First, foreign governments are undoubtedly attempting to influence candidates and voters in Canada. Foreign interference is a real and growing threat, and more remains to be done promptly to strengthen our capacity to detect, deter, and counter foreign interference
really,
elections.
The other things that he found were how poor the whole system, the Canadian system, communicates these dangers. So in saying,
the elections of 2019 and 2021 were well protected by sophisticated mechanisms, and there is no basis to lack confidence in those results.
And right now, the prime minister is reaching out to the opposition leaders to see if they want to get security clearance because
I found him persuasive on this point, but I thought that he did come close to saying that the media don't have it right because the media don't have full context and that they're relying, therefore, solely on the perspective of one source.
So a lot of people thought there was going to be an inquiry. I think most people thought it was going to be an inquiry just because, okay, David Johnston's name is on the line here, and he doubles down and said, yeah, we're going to have hearings, and I'm going to be the one doing the hearings.
We see today that his ski buddy, cottage neighbor, family friend, and member of the Beijing-financed Trudeau Foundation came out and did exactly what I predicted, helped Trudeau cover up the influence by Beijing.
Well, like I said earlier, it's not always great on the predictions. Cryptocurrency would be one example that I would give. Most people, I think, were guessing that there was going to be an inquiry. So, I don't know, is this freeing for Trudeau? He seems like, hey, you know what, I'm happy. I said I would go by what the guy said, and I'm doing that.
I committed to listening very carefully and abiding by the recommendations that the former Governor General made, and he explained and justified his thought processes by it, and we will be following his recommendations.
You've legalized smiling.
For the people who don't like the government, let's bring in our panelists. Reshmi Nair is the host of The Rush. That is the afternoon show on News Talk 1010 in Toronto. And Laura Babcock, Power Group Communications, host of The O Show. So, guys, I've introduced a lot there. Do we just want to start off with the idea, Reshmi, that there's not going to be an inquiry? What are your thoughts, and how do you think that's consumed by the Canadian public?
Yeah, I think most people assumed there would be an inquiry called, but the focus with the criticism seems to be David Johnston and him continuing on with the hearings, whatever we're going to learn from them. Also, that he thinks that we just need to focus on where we go from here, as opposed to no need to look back on the last few years. I think Canadians have questions. And transparency seems to be top of mind. I don't know if that was really offered today.
Yeah, I think that's right. I wonder if Jerry's going to ask tomorrow. Listen, the prime minister says you can see some of that top secret information that is going to put everything in perspective and why those leaks, while disturbing, white might not have been what people were saying they will were. Laura, what are your thoughts?
Well, it seems like an interim measure to me. You know, is he really the final authority on whether we're ever going to get to a public inquiry? Or is it going to be listening for years to Pierre Poilievre demand one and listening to Jagmeet Singh say he's going to keep pushing for one? I mean, so yeah, Trudeau hired his rapporteur and picked the best guy he could find, but someone who was part of the foundation, the Trudeau Foundation. I mean, that doesn't look great, even if you think that Johnson's got a great pedigree or a great reputation. He was too close to the situation. He's too close to the Trudeaus. So yeah, do your little hearings, whatever. Hopefully they result in some stuff. But I think most of Canada is looking at this going, why not do the public inquiry? All I heard was that it's too sensitive, the information, and that he doesn't really need the subpoena power to do his hearings. So do your hearings, do your 5-month contract. And if we're not satisfied as a country, I'll keep beating the drum for a public inquiry. So I don't think this is over for Trudeau by a long shot.
Well, it's interesting that he also said, listen, I thought going into this, there would be no way that I couldn't conduct or I wouldn't recommend an inquiry. But with what he found, and I think specifically that everything, the leaks that people were concerned about, that given the context, they weren't necessarily what we thought. Now, apparently those things are top secret and can't go to explaining, but I just don't think that that satisfies the, hey, justice doesn't just need to be seen to be done. But because of the position that David Johnston has been put in by Pierre Poilievre, sowing all these seeds of doubt that perhaps he should have recommended an inquiry, or at the very least saying, you know what, I'm going to remove myself at this time, not that I'm going to be the one at the head of the hearings. Rishmi.
Yeah, I don't think David Johnston needs to remove himself. I don't think, you know, whatever's being slung at him with the criticisms is not sticking enough to remove the shine that is the former governor general. This guy is a reputable human being. Just because Pierre Poilievre labels him a ski buddy of someone who you or some Canadians may not like, it doesn't take the glean away from the former governor general. I trust David Johnston in what he's saying. I just don't believe that he's offering enough transparency. You know, if Justin Trudeau is going to say, just trust me instead of just watch me, I don't think that's going to sell with Canadians. People are not looking for someone to stand in front of us and say, trust me, I've got this. I'm not going to tell you everything. We need to know more. And then that's just the age that we're living in. And that's where you win points.
I agree that there's probably not a person that you couldn't impugn in this country more than David Johnston, but that ship has sailed, I think. And I think that the vision right now is a little tainted, Laura.
Well, listen, from a PR point of view, Poilievre is winning the battle on this. For months and months, the public's been beating the drum to go to an inquiry. If Trudeau had have said right up front, okay, let's do it, let's do the inquiry. My government's done nothing wrong. We're confident in the results of the past two elections. And you know what? Let's not waste time. Let's start it. These inquiries take a while anyway. We better get going. But instead, he came up with this middle manager rapporteur position that nobody had ever heard of. So it's one more thing that people feel disconnected from Trudeau when he puts this new position in. And then somebody who was not just a family friend, but someone on his foundation board, right? Which is part of the whole problem, or at least part of the allegations. So I think from a PR perspective, he's made mistakes, mistakes of hubris, mistakes of not being connected to the grassroots in Canada, not understanding the level of concern people have about his government. But it's a mistake. And I think it's going to ultimately end up in an inquiry.
Rishmi, I get what you're saying, but I think the optics are different for many Canadians who maybe are centrist, maybe are a little tired of Trudeau, maybe looking for a way to go, that it has played out the exact way that Pierre Poilievre said it was going to play out, I think should be more concerning for the Liberals.
Absolutely. There are many reasons to not like Justin Trudeau. Blackface is one of them. The Wii scandal, which Pierre Poilievre was very handily involved in, in bringing things to light. All of that deserves credit. Absolutely. When the prime minister stands there and says what's in the Globe and Mail isn't true, I'm going to remember that forever as well, right? When it came to Jody Wilson-Raybould.
Yeah.
But this is not one of them. David Johnston isn't one of them.
Okay.
I don't think he's one of them.
All right. We'll find out tomorrow on the iHeart Talk Radio Network, the Jerry Agar Show, which is the 9 to noon show in Toronto. They will have Pierre Poilievre on, and I'm guessing he'll be...
You've legalized smiling.
He'll be happy. More of the rundown and the final takes from Reshmi and Laura in a moment.
The reason auto manufacturers are taking AM radios out of cars. Jim Richards and News Talk Tonight on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
This just given to me moments ago. Ford has changed their mind. They are no longer taking AM radio out of the car. I'll take full responsibility for that. Coming up in about 15 minutes time here, we're going to talk to the former head of, he was actually the Asian Pacific chief for CSIS on what he thinks of this. We'll get a perspective from a former leader of a major party here in Canada and a former diplomat to China, all coming up here as we continue to measure the fallout, if there is any, from the decision from the rapporteur, David Johnston, that there is not a need for an inquiry. Again, Pierre Poilievre will be on with Jerry Agar tomorrow on the iHeart Talk Radio Network on the Toronto station, News Talk 1010. Let's move things along because I think this has been done in different portions right across the country, trying to make it illegal to be homeless. I don't know why they just don't say to homeless people, hey, why don't you stop being unhoused? And then that would solve everything. Like, just stop it. Okay? And then they would be like, yeah, you know what? That's a good point. I should just stop being unhoused. I say that because in Barrie, they have made a move initially to, it looks like, charge homeless people for begging and actually charge and ticket people who might give them money. A former Barrie councillor says the following.
It also includes some absurd proposals, such as new bylaw offenses for distributing food or groceries to people in need or giving change to someone on the street corner. It's a waste of public resources, and it's not going to do anything to actually solve the issue of homelessness.
It will contribute to you not being able to get a job, because when your employer, when you do get your act together, runs your name to see if you have any history, they'll find that you have all of these outstanding payments. So that might become a problem. Also, I don't know, if I am hungry, I'm going to be like, hey, I'm really hungry, not I might get a ticket. So these things usually do not work. Laura, what are your thoughts on this? Do we have Laura Babcock? Okay, Reshmi, what are your thoughts on this?
It's so dehumanizing. I hate it so much, Jim. I just hate it. I never, ever understood, even when I was single digit age, I never understood how there are people in our society who think we could just make people go away. We could just make poor people go away. People who don't look the same way or are different in any way. Oh, just make them go. Where do they go? Yeah. Where do they go? So, banning helping out the homeless it's just so cruel. I don't understand how it could be justified as a form of discouragement, because that's what it's being justified as.
I gotta say, though,
to discourage it.
Am I, in an attempt to be fair, I wonder, you know, if you live in the suburbs, you don't live in Barrie, you like to go to downtown Barrie, you like to go to downtown Toronto, Ottawa, Montreal. If you're like, hey, things coming out of COVID are not necessarily the same, I go to a downtown place and I feel like I'm harassed. I read the news. There seems to be more violence, and maybe BIAs, business improvement areas for any sort of districts, are like, hey, this unhoused problem is a real deterrent to doing business, or at least it appears to be, Laura.
Well, hey, Jim, I used to run a Chamber of Commerce, and I was sad to see that the Barrie Chamber of Commerce was on board with this policy. Here's the thing, and we just did an O-Show special on it tonight that's coming out soon. We talked about the Barrie situation in the broader context of what we're doing with homeless and encampments. And the fact that, you know, they had some other measures in there that they want to encourage, other programs, this, that, and the other thing, I'm glad to see that the Barrie Council is trying to put in some other wraparound services and some other programs. But the point is, you cannot go anywhere. I don't know about you, but I live in the suburbs, and there are people who are living in houselessness who are on our corners here in the suburbs. It was never like this before. There's nowhere that you can go. There's no way to drive them anywhere because they have nowhere to go. The fact is, we don't have, in Hamilton alone, we have 1,500 people living on the street and only 500 shelters available. Yeah. And we've got an 8,000 list for affordable housing. We're in an absolute crisis, not just here in Ontario or Canada, around the world. And there are best practices to actually move people, transition them safely into housing with harm reduction programs and all kinds of other things. Other countries have figured it out. This policy is anachronistic, it's draconian, it's going backwards, not forwards, and it's leading us down a dark path. These are human beings. We are not going to ignore them, and we shouldn't be banned from helping them. And if Barrie does this, and I'm sure people from Hamilton will go to Barrie and will help people on the street and give them stuff. I mean, we have to support people. They're dying. What are they thinking in Barrie?
Yeah. But what do you say to those BIAs that are like, okay, that's fine. You try to do business down here when everybody from the suburbs or everybody is afraid to come out and do any shopping on this main drag and, you know, get things to 2019 again.
It's a serious issue. I'm not denying that. And literally in Hamilton, a bunch of businesses have asked for police protection because the problem's gotten so severe, downtown businesses. But this is where we have to have a moment of realization as a society. There is no shoving people away and hiding them in parks and ravines anymore. There are simply too many people who cannot access housing and they're getting rent evicted. We have to give them housing. Housing first is the only solution. So the BIAs and the Chamber of Commerce should be part of the solution. They can't push away the problem. It's not going to be a long-term sustainable resolution for them. The resolution is housing.
Yeah. It's interesting taking a look at what's going on in Alberta right now. I was listening to a podcast about some of the things that Danielle Smith had actually said during the COVID, during the pandemic, stuff like, I'm not going to wear a poppy because of COVID and these regulations, which I don't know how that has anything to do with the soldiers who put their life on the line during wars or people who've made a sacrifice in this country and, you know, saying some of the measures were like Nazi-like. I mean, some real garbage stuff, which is dismissed and explained away by going, and I laughed during the podcast that I was listening to. Somebody with some credibility in their voice was trying to make an argument. Well, you know, people make mistakes, and at least they've changed. But this headline says we don't want our neighbors to think that we're communist when it comes to voting for something that's not conservative. And I would say that the United Conservative Party in Alberta, that is not conservative. A lot of that stuff is garbage. I know we've got to have time for final takes. Anybody with thoughts on that? Reshmi?
Yeah, it's an interesting election to follow in Alberta because it's either the NDP or the UCP. And I think voters are being driven in different directions. I don't think they're going towards anything. So voter turnout is going to be an interesting one as well.
Yeah, I mean, the reasonable Conservative Party has now been abandoned because the thing's been taken over by, what is the Alberta Proud crowd or whatever the hell it's called? Take Back Alberta, I think. Let's do final takes. Let's start off with Laura. Laura, what's your final take tonight?
Well, Megyn Kelly in the U.S., as people have been following, has kind of morphed into more of a Tucker Carlson type of voice and is trying to, I think, eat up some of that right-wing nonsense. But to go after the cover of Sports Illustrated because there is someone on there who's transgendered, or to say that Martha Stewart is off-putting because she was on there, you know, as an 80-year-old, because young boys won't want and look at that. Young boys don't look at magazines. I have a teenage boy. Yeah. Everything they've ever wanted is online. And to hear, you know, a woman's voice out there disparaging other women on the cover and trying to, you know, relegate us back to the 1970s, I think is really despicable. So I hope Megan goes away quickly.
Reshmi, what's your final take?
Tomorrow, I get to speak to students at my former elementary school with the Toronto District School Board, Dixon Grove Junior Middle School, and I'm really excited to speak to students in grades 6, 7, and 8. And I've been reflecting on my life at 42 leading up to tomorrow. And so I encourage everyone listening to do the same thing. Go back and read your old yearbooks and remember your whole life and your childhood dreams, because it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun.
Great stuff. Thanks, guys, for the rundown. Straight ahead, how does a former Pacific chief of CSIS feel about what happened today with the rapporteur? Next on the iHeartTalk Radio Network.
It's News Talk tonight on the iHeartRadio Talk Network. Here's your host, Jim Richards.
We see today that his ski buddy, cottage neighbor, family friend, and member of the Beijing-financed Trudeau Foundation came out and did exactly what I predicted.
I got to say, I got to watch my language here, that's a pathetic... That is a pathetic, weaselly, garbage. I'm trying to watch my language here. And you can listen to Pierre Poilievre tomorrow on Jerry Agar's show. But I thought that was greasy and douchey. That's what I'll say, not watching my language. Now, that doesn't mean that I think that the perception is great. I do think David Johnston is unimpeachable. But I think doing that to that man with that resume, and yes, there appears to be a conflict, I think he should have stepped down. And today, when he says...
Based on my review, I have reached 5 clear conclusions. First, foreign governments are undoubtedly attempting to influence candidates and voters in Canada. Foreign interference is a real and growing threat, and more remains to be done promptly to strengthen our capacity to detect, deter, and counter foreign interference in elections.
So he basically, I mean, in a nutshell, he said about the two elections in question.
The elections of 2019 and 2021 were well protected by sophisticated mechanisms, and there is no basis to lack confidence in those results.
But he also said things like, we've got to really, you know, take a look at how we communicate these things, that the leader of the country needs to make sure they know what is being done. As Matt Gurney said, it seems like they let one guy like read this big binder of information. It's up to him whether or not that's going to be translated to Justin Trudeau. But also, not just that, that in all of these leaks, David Johnston basically said, listen, I made my decision based on finding that those leaks weren't presented in a context that would have been suitable for anybody to make a decision. So hopefully Pierre Poilievre tomorrow when he's on with Jerry Agar will let Jerry know whether or not he wants that security access to find out, hey, what did the rapporteur mean by that? Because if not, dismissing it out of hand without that information, that's your leader? Let's talk right now to Michelle Junot-Katsuya, who is the former Asian Pacific chief of CSIS, and he joins us right now. Mr. Katsuya, can you tell us what you thought of the decision by the rapporteur?
Not totally surprised about the decision of not calling for a public inquiry, because way ahead of him, I suggested that, yes, it would be very, very difficult because of the amount of classified information to have a meaningful demonstration to the public, because we need to keep that information secret, either to talk about the targets, either to talk about the means of collection, the sources. So everybody would understand that yeah. element. Unfortunately, for the rest, very disappointed. Pretty much the same song that Mr. Trudeau has been singing also from the get-go, blaming CSIS for not distributing the information correctly and to the right people, or doing the follow-up. Well, you transfer information to a minister. The minister is not obliged to return to CSIS and say, oh, by the way, this is what I did with the information. This yep. is what we're going to be doing, or something like this. There's no accountability of that nature within the system. So true, maybe the system needs to be corrected on that aspect. But what is also disappointing is, as you pointed out in your introduction, I totally agree with you, is dismissing the information very, very quickly without giving us a chance to look at it and to sort of know exactly what we're talking about. Mm. Worse, to even blame the media for the reporting, saying, no, you only had a partial information, and any good professional would know not to mention something like this. Just a moment. The information was relatively quite precise, sufficient enough to justify the kind of conversation that we've been having for months now. And if nobody believes that there is foreign interference, you're coming from Mars. You were absent from this planet because everybody have been talking about it. And by the way, we've known about it for the last 35 years. We've known about it since Mr. Mulroney. And I can tell you that every single prime minister have been compromised. Every single prime minister has been told, every single prime minister have been using that information for their own use and purposes yeah. as well. And every prime minister have made questionable decision towards China. So it's not because we didn't know. It's because we lack a certain maturity or a certain culture when it comes to security.
But he said in his speech that there is a problem.
Based on my review, I have reached 5 clear conclusions. First, foreign governments are undoubtedly attempting to influence candidates and voters in Canada. Foreign interference is a real and growing threat, and more remains to be done promptly to strengthen our capacity.
So given what you just said, what's the problem there? I mean, we need to do more, and we need to make sure that everybody's in the loop.
And he says promptly. And what we're having is more consultation. We're having the summer holidays. Everything will be pushed to the fall. And he's going to give his last report in October. Mm-hmm. That's, again, pushing away. What we need urgently is for everybody to realize that this problem, just like in Australia, just like in the U.S., just like in the U.K., it is happening right here in Canada. It's even happening even more in Canada because we don't have any law to protect ourselves adequately. So the investigators, mainly the RCMP, are not capable okay. to sort of put that against
Can I just play you this clip from Justin Trudeau today, and you can tell me whether or not, as you address it there, saying we don't have laws that are good enough, he claims that we do.
At the G7, one of the things we discussed was the rapid response mechanism that Canada introduced when we hosted in 2018 so that we could all strengthen our response to diverse and evolving threats to democracy.
You're saying that's not good enough?
No. What Mr. Trudeau, and this I will simply salute, he did the right thing to create a committee that is capable to look at every activities of the across the board, across the departments, when it comes to national security. The problem is that this is not a quick response team, and it's not a capability that we need to have as we speak. What we need to have as we speak is a law that defines exactly what foreign interference is about, a law that will also very clearly the kind of punishment that you're going to have. And I'm not talking about a fine. I'm talking about treason term, because we're talking about treason, or we're talking about espionage, because yep. the foreign agent that come here, they recruit Canadians. Those Canadians, they are traitor to us. And that is why this is a very serious thing.
I love your analysis. Thank you very much for your time. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. Have a great evening.
You too. Michelle Junot-Katsuya, a former Asian Pacific chief for CSIS. Very biting stuff. The political angle from Thomas Mulcair. When the iHeartRadio's News Talk Tonight continues.